Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Nepal police round up activists in a perversion crackdown, Zanzibar institutes hard time for gay and lesbian sex, and the healing harmonies of a queer chorale. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 21st, 2004. Police in Nepal have been rounding up gay and transgendered men, including AIDS prevention outreach workers from the Blue Diamond Society, the nation's only civil rights group representing sexual minorities. Blue Diamond leader Sunil Pant wrote this week that police are searching parks and other cruising areas, creating terror among men who have sex with men. On a single night this month, police arrested 39 Blue Diamond members, raiding gay venues and rousting a number of men at gunpoint from their own homes as they slept. Blue Diamond alleges that police beat the detainees and denied them food. A police spokesperson claims that one man, who is currently hospitalized for stab wounds, was the victim of unknown assailants enraged by his cross-dressing. But Blue Diamond says police are not investigating and have not even taken a statement from the victim. A police spokesperson said there were judicial detention orders against the 39 men for spreading perversion. International calls for the men's release have come from Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the United Nations AIDS Program, as well as from the International Lesbian and Gay Association and the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission.
Ironically, the 3-year-old Blue Diamond Society first gained significant visibility earlier this year as it lobbied Nepal's government to support a resolution against discrimination based on sexual orientation as the nation participated in the UN Commission on Human Rights meeting. So far, that visibility has worked against the group, as a private attorney has filed a petition with Nepal's Supreme Court demanding the government shut down Blue Diamond. The latest roundup does not bode well in this continuing case, since it's up to the government to demonstrate why it should not act against Blue Diamond. Although Nepal has no law explicitly prohibiting homosexual acts, it has a more general unnatural sexual acts statute, which has often been used against gay men and transgenders. Conviction can be punished with up to a year in prison. There have been a number of previous instances of police action against gay men and transgenders in Nepal, including disbanding a peaceful rally for civil rights Blue Diamond held outside the seat of government.
Another Asian nation where AIDS prevention workers have been arrested is India. But this week, India was rocked by the brutal double murder of a gay male couple in their home in an upscale part of New Delhi. The victims were Pushkin Chandra and his partner, variously identified as Kuldeep or Vishal. Several lesbian, gay, and transgender activists denounced the sensationalized media coverage of the case. They say it's portrayed the area's previously low-profile community in a stereotypical manner, which has further marginalized them, as one puts it, fueling homophobia. They view this as a setback to their efforts to increase national understanding and to repeal the nation's harsh sodomy law, which provides for a decade behind bars. One activist said police had overemphasized the gay angle of the crime, alleging that only gays had been interrogated in the investigation and that the questions had been offensive ones. Police had emphasized the quantity of pornographic materials they found at the scene, and at first suggested the motive might have been a response either to attempted forced sex or attempted extortion, or even sadomasochism gone wrong. A few days later, it appeared that the more likely motive was robbery. At last report, police are still trying to track down two suspects believed to have fled the Delhi area.
Zanzibar has completed enactment of a harsh new sodomy law and criminalization of same-gender marriages. The bill was passed unanimously by the legislature in April, signed into law by President Amani Karume last week, and took effect immediately. Consensual sex between adult males can be punished by up to 25 years imprisonment. Consensual sex between adult women is punishable by up to 7 years. The Indian Ocean Archipelago has some autonomy in its governance from nearby Tanzania, and its large Muslim majority is believed to support the new law. However, the statute is expected to hurt revenues from tourism, a major source of income for Zanzibar.
The Philippines may be heading in the opposite direction as Akbayan Party Representative Loretta Ann Rosales reintroduced her bill to prohibit discriminatory practices based on sex or sexual orientation and gender identity, whether actual or perceived. Violations could be punished with substantial fines or up to 6 years in prison. The bill would cover areas including public and private employment, housing, education, health care, and public accommodations. It would also prohibit police harassment and forced medical or psychological exams intended to determine or change sexual orientation or gender identity. First filed in 1998, the House approved it for the first time earlier this year. It was developed in conjunction with the group Lagablab, Lesbian and Gay Legislative Advocacy Network, Philippines.
In Taiwan, the mayor of Taipei is making a generous allotment for lesbi-gay community events in the city's budget. While visiting Germany and chatting with openly gay Berlin Mayor Klaus Wowereit, Taipei Mayor Ma Ying-jeou said he's earmarked 1 million new Taiwan dollars. He declared it's the government's obligation to support gay rights as part of protecting basic human rights, Taiwan's Central News Agency reported.
In North America, equal marriage rights continue to dominate the news. Canada's Justice Minister, Erwin Kotler, said the federal government will not oppose or delay any further legal actions regarding marriages or divorces of same-gender couples. While the Canadian government hasn't actively opposed those lawsuits since the top provincial courts in Ontario, Quebec, and British Columbia declared marriage discrimination a violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it has been trying to stall other lawsuits until the Supreme Court of Canada has reviewed the issue. The nation's highest court has scheduled hearings in October to review some questions the government has posed in preparing federal marriage legislation, but its opinion is not expected until sometime later.
A U.S. federal judge in the state of Washington this week rejected a U.S. lesbian couple's Canadian marriage, upholding the U.S. Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA. It's believed to be the first time a federal court has considered the constitutionality of that 1996 law, although this ruling is not binding on other courts. The movement to establish an amendment to the U.S. Constitution against same-gender marriage has been largely based on an expectation that courts would find DOMA violates the Constitution. But that wasn't the case for federal bankruptcy court Judge Paul Snyder, who upheld the U.S. Department of Justice's rejection of a joint filing for bankruptcy by Tacoma couple Lee and Ann Candu.
In Massachusetts this week, gay and lesbian couples from outside the state lost their first round in seeking to marry there. Although Massachusetts this year became the first U.S. state to open marriage to same-gender couples, Governor Mitt Romney's administration insisted on revived enforcement of a 1913 state law prohibiting marriages for non-residents that won't be recognized in their home states. Superior Court Judge Carol Ball denied the couples a preliminary injunction to block that enforcement. Despite Ball's apparent sympathy for the eight couples from eight different states, she found it to be both rational and currently equally enforced. The couples will definitely be appealing.
And finally, the world's been watching the Olympics in Athens, but even Outsports.com has so far only been able to identify 9 open gays and lesbians among the 10,500 participants. There were 7 out athletes in Sydney in 2000.
Perhaps the most notorious so far is German cyclist Judith Arndt, whose rude hand gesture at the finish line of the women's road race was punished with a fine by the International Cycling Union. Arndt's insult was intended for the German Cycling Federation officials, who kept her domestic partner and Barcelona gold medalist Petra Rossner off the cycling team. Arndt insists that cost Germany the gold medal. The German team did win silver, but Arndt told reporters, "Petra is the best sprinter in the world. I'm sad that she did not ride with me. I dedicate my medal to her."
Another team silver winner was swimmer Johan Kenkwies of the Netherlands, who publicly identified himself as a gay man earlier this year, and this week shared a medal for the men's 4x100 freestyle relay.
Open lesbian French tennis pro Amélie Mauresmo won the silver medal in the women's singles.
Defeated in quarterfinal matches this week were open lesbians Imke Duplitzer, a German fencer, and tennis legend Martina Navratilova of the U.S. This was Navratilova's first appearance in the Olympics, and she did set a record for the Games. At 47, she's the oldest woman ever to compete.
There are 4 other openly gay men, British hurdler Rob Newton, and horseman Carl Hester of Britain, and Gunter Seidel and Robert Dover of the U.S.
Dover is one of many who believe there are plenty of other lesbi-gay athletes in these games who are not making their sexual identities public. he told the Associated Press. The reason many of them aren't out is because they're focused on their job during this time when sports is the number one thing in their lives.
There was one queer moment at the Olympics this week when a non-participant interrupted a diving competition. Presumably, he was seeking publicity for the website whose name was painted on his bare chest when he mounted the springboard in polka dot tights with a tulle tutu.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 21st, 2004. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Updating our report on the 39 gay and transgendered men who were arrested, detained, and allegedly mistreated in Nepal, an email message from the Blue Diamond Society informs us that the men have all been released on bail. They face court appearances in September. This Way Out will continue to follow this story. We'll have some music you can tap your political toes to after we visit with someone who really knows the virtue of a good tune. But first... For the past few months, we've been telling you about three special 2003 year-in-review CDs, which are still available. We also want to remind you of two other CDs you can own that chronicle what this year is the 25th anniversary of two pivotal events in queer history.
Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan
White has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter.
From the shocking San Francisco assassinations to the assassin's suicide, Diminished Capacity includes riveting on-scene coverage of the May 1979 White Night Riots, which many described as the Second Stonewall Rebellion. And from the planning to the bumps along the road to the event itself and the numbers game aftermath, the October 1979 and first ever National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights.
We can get our sisters and brothers on the streets of Washington saying that we're gay, we're proud, we're strong, and this year is the year.
If I have to walk on my hands to Washington, I'm going to be there.
The power of God is against you, devil. We don't appreciate you being here.
We are everywhere.
It's just a huge smorgasbord of humanity. You wouldn't know how many people were gay until you took a look at this march.
I want those television cameras out there to turn it on and focus on one of the largest demonstrations in the history of this country.
What disturbed me was to pick up a Washington Post and see 25,000, and pick up a New York Times and see 75,000, and listen to the local news that said 125,000. I think we have to teach straight people how to count.
For information about all of our specially produced CDs for your queer history and culture collection, please visit our website at www.thiswayout.org. The proliferation of local choral groups is proof positive that the lesbian, gay, bi, and trans community truly has a song in its heart. Since 1990, the South Coast Chorale of Long Beach, California, has entertained, enlightened, unified, and healed its audiences and its members using the power of words and music. It was born in the living room of Bob Phibbs, who until recently has led the group. This Way Out correspondent Nancy Beverly wanted to know more about Bob's story and his experiences with the chorale.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The butcher, the baker, the drummer, and then makes no difference what group I'm in.
You're listening to the South Coast Chorale of Long Beach, California. 40 singers strong, the chorale has been a proud ambassador between gay and straight communities since it was founded 14 years ago.
Just come see who we really are. Not going to be apologetic. Not going to say, oh, but these are downtrodden women or these are marginalized men. No. We are your doctors, your lawyers, we're your teachers. This is who we are. Not better or worse, this is just who we are.
And that was South Coast Chorale founder Bob Phibbs, who has been the artistic director and conductor of the group until this summer. I caught up with Bob at his home in Long Beach recently and asked him to relate his musical journey and how the South Coast Chorale came to be. Bob loved music since he was a kid, and he had some great experiences conducting when he was in high school and college. But could he translate that into a career? Bob hit his first hurdle as he wrapped up his work at Chapman College in Orange, California.
So I'm student teaching at Irvine High School, and 30 kids playing untuned guitars, and they wanted to play Stairway to Heaven. And I said, I don't want this as a life, because I had two choirs I could do. I think I had two beginning guitars and an intermediate guitar. And they said, well, that's the way it is in the public schools. You know, whatever it takes for you to round out that schedule, that's what you have to do. And I said, not me.
Not a great beginning for a music career. But Bob, who had a minor in business, got a job at a Western store. And it turned out he was great at selling. So he stayed with that company for 14 years. Music was on the back burner. Until he went through the awkward process of coming out. One fateful weekend in 1980, Bob had been down in San Diego with a guy, and when he got back later than his parents expected, his mom confronted him.
She goes, well, for all we know, you could have been with somebody that you shouldn't have been with. And I go, yeah, but I wasn't. She goes, well, I mean, for all we know, you could have been with someone who was gay. And I said, what does that have to do with it? She goes, well, do we have to ask the next question? I said, Mom, I don't think you want to go here. And she goes, are you gay? I said, well, yes. Oh, my God. Then it was like, I can't believe it. The histrionics and all this kind of stuff. And one of my brothers said, no brother of mine can be gay. That's it. And the other one was, you can't be gay because being gay doesn't serve life. And it was a really horrible time. After a couple of months on this, I'd heard about a gay chorus that was started up in Los Angeles, Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. And I thought, I could go back to music with this. Because I was at my best when I was singing. I knew that.
Bob sang with the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles for 3 or 4 years. But the idea of conducting didn't come back to him until after he had left that group. You never know where inspiration will come from. And Bob's came one night in West Hollywood when he saw a sound truck parked near where he was getting gas for his car. A guy he once dated from that sound company wasn't there that night, but the guys in the sound truck invited Bob in anyway.
So they bring me into the trailer and this is the old day when they have big reel-to-reels, and there's these six of them operating across the side of the trailer. And I said, what are you doing? He said, well, we just finished recording this movie soundtrack for Neil Diamond's next movie. It's called The Jazz Singer. The hit will be off of this called America. And they gave me the earphones to listen to it. And at that moment, I decided I had to get back to conducting.
Bob didn't actually conduct America until May 14th, 2004, his final regular gig with the South Coast Chorale. But back in 1990, Neil Diamond's song jump-started him into conducting again, that time with a men's chorus in Long Beach. While he was there, he hit another obstacle and another moment of inspiration.
And we've started rehearsals for this first ever I Want to Do an AIDS Memorial Concert. I think by the third rehearsals were on Monday night, I got a call on a Monday morning at work that some of the guys had gotten a petition to get rid of me because they didn't like that idea of we should just be good times and we shouldn't be doing stuff like that. This is back in 1990. I walked into that group that night and I said, I don't know who you are, and it's such a closeted thing to do, I can't work with this. And I left. And at that point, I said, I don't need this. I'm not going to work with just gay men. I'm going to work with men and women. And there's roughly 20-some mixed choruses across the nation. And I talked to several directors, and I remember calling one guy, and I said, you know, I'm thinking of starting my own chorus. What should I be aware of? He goes, why would you want to do a thing like that? And every single one of them was either bitter or burned out, or they had gotten into a whole parody idea. The women have to be this, and the guys have to be this. I said, there's got to be a better way. And so in our living room, all of us came together, and we made the bylaws, and the first rehearsal was April of 1990, April 22nd.
So with 12 people, no budget, and starting in the living room, he shared with his partner Bill Pratt, Bob began the South Coast Chorale. The first 2 years, the group performed in churches, since there weren't a lot of other places they could go. But the goal was to find another home, because they weren't a religious chorus, and a lot of people would never set foot in a church or a temple. Then along came the Carpenter Center, which was being built on the campus of Cal State Long Beach.
Bill and I walk in. It's 1,100 seats, 70-foot by 50-foot proscenium. And we said, well, someday that might be us. And then it got to be like, well, why don't we just go there? Why don't we just make that leap?
And the beauty that I saw in everything, the beauty in everything was in the rock.
In 1993, the South Coast Chorale grew to 21 members and became the premier event at the newly completed Richard and Karen Carpenter Performing Arts Center. They went from audiences of 70 to 800, and from being homeless to being a resident group, one of only three, at this brand new venue.
So I never knew that my nose was too flat, and I never knew that my skin was too black, and I never knew that my clothes didn't fit, and I never knew there were things that I missed, and the beauty in everything was in
the room. Over the years, music has been a powerful avenue of healing for Bob and the Chorale. One of the most profound programs they created was the 1997 musical, Out. With music by Steve Landau, Out was inspired by the 40 coming out stories of everyone in the choir.
And mine was how my mom had forced me out, you know, and the other one was my partner, whose mom found out that he was gay and said, I can never show my face here, and the idea of being found out was ours. The premiere of the work was at the Carpenter Center. My partner, Bill, ended up singing my song. As he's singing it, he's looking over my head at my mom. So it was really quite an emotional night for, like, everybody.
Bob fully admits he's processed every issue you can with music, and that he's grown in many ways because of his work with the Chorale.
I was a pretty uptight guy. I was trying to be somebody, trying to be a conductor that I thought I needed to be, or trying to fit into a corporate mold, and ultimately I abandoned all that. I'm an individual consultant, I'm a speaker, I'm an author, I go around the world telling people how to make their businesses better, but I also live in a great house with my partner, and the things we've been able to do, from me being able to be happy with myself, I know I would never be able to do. Because I was trying to be somebody else. I was trying to be the great conductor who could sing the viola line in an open orchestral score. Well, I don't care about that, but I thought that meant I was less. And once I realized that, it gave me the freedom to be Bob.
Something inside so strong.
Most of the members would tell you they never signed on for all the changes that happened in their lives. One of the guys that spoke at the show when we first did Out, his son came and said he didn't want anything to do with his dad. And yet the very thing is, his son was gay. And so he couldn't deal with his own story, much less his dad's. And then, you know, the funny thing was we're walking down Gay Pride and the dad is driving the truck and his son is out there in his Calvin Klein's, and I said, boy, how time changes in 7 years, Gary. And we had a good laugh about that.
This summer, Bob is stepping down from the South Coast Chorale, having promised his partner Bill he would stay no longer than 14 years. Under a new director, the Chorale will go on, and Bob Phibbs will always know the power of music.
Well, I think it usually teaches all of us that we have feelings that we have no way of ever describing. Leonard Bernstein is in a cab in New York, and a reporter's asking him, tell me, what's so great about Beethoven? He goes, I will, but would you first describe that sunset for me? Well, it's rosy and pink and blue. And he's like, okay, so is that what a sunset is? Well, no, and that's kind of what music is. I mean, it does touch people in different ways. In our final concert, I sang a solo to my partner, Bill, after 14 years, because he had done every set for us since we'd ever been there. And often he didn't get as much praise as I did, certainly. And that was the one that people were all crying about. Now, I didn't put that into the program going, oh, they'll all cry here. But it was more like, they need to see me singing to my partner, two men in love, and modeling exactly what our role is about. And if that happened to reach hearts, then that's great. What has music taught me? Music's taught me that the heart is always open and free. And if, in our best sense, that's what it's about. And that moment of discovery, that aha of, wow, I'm just like you.
In this heart of
that profile of the South Coast Chorale and its founder, Bob Phibbs, was produced by Nancy Beverly.
This is Dorothy Allison, author of Bastard Out of Carolina and numerous trashy pieces. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
New York City is bracing for the Republican Party's national convention, and so is the Apocalypse Yesterday Choir.
We lost our jobs and health care, praise our George. Lost civil rights and clean air, praise our George. In Iraq each day there is a new combustion. Bless our George. A W, a mass destruction.
Praise Our George was written by Susie Day and Tom Wilson Weinberg. For more information, you can email praiseourgeorge@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and Nancy Beverly contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Only you can keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs in the bargain, too. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, KDHX St. Louis, Missouri, to YOU Tamworth, New South Wales, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.